Good morning. Today is Wednesday, November the 22nd, day before Thanksgiving. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County Supervisor, a turkey in his own right, Mike Wilson.
Or several.
Yeah, I favor dressing.
There you go.
So I'm the dressing guy. You can be the turkey guy.
There you go.
All right. Let's see if we can find a quote in here.
Okay.
Is this yours?
Nope.
Okay. Our quote this morning. You know what? I bet you there's a Thanksgiving quote. If I grab the right book, I bet you there's something in here about Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Let me see what we can come up with here. Vacation. That's pretty close to Thanksgiving for a lot of folks, huh?
There you go.
All right. Do you guys do anything special?
This year it's going to be just at the house. No traveling.
Oh, really?
Just, yeah, inviting some neighbors over. And maybe my mom will be in town. So.
Well, she hasn't let you know?
Well, you know, she.
Which kid's her favorite?
No, it doesn't work like that. Sometimes the parents like to volunteer at some of the vets.
Oh, okay.
Events.
And okay.
So, yeah.
So they may just pop in then.
Yeah.
And spend a little bit of time with you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's a real basic, easy one. I love this one. 1 Thessalonians. In everything, give thanks.
Good enough.
That's kind of works for tomorrow, doesn't it? Yeah.
Except for the bummer stuff, maybe not so much.
All right. Debbie Danner is now officially with us. Oh, boy. Well, you got to be a little tickled about having the half of the trail open. You know, what do they say? Half a trail is better than no trail at all?
Oh, yeah. Awesome. I mean, it's So you've obviously seen that the Arcata section, I guess you'd call it, the north end of the Humboldt Bay Trail.
I saw the training wheels over the bridges put on.
You know, yeah, it's good. Yeah, there's people riding on it, walking on it. Looks good.
Kind of an interesting concept. Now, that is, Karen said last Friday that it's part of the Pacific Coast Trail?
Yes, the California Coast Trail.
Okay, it's California Coast, not Pacific Coast.
Yeah, okay. The California Coast Trail. It's definitely an important section of it. And Eureka is completing at the end of December this north section of inside Eureka.
That's the one that's weaving along from Waterfront Drive?
Yep, from Tidd Street around and then under the bridge. And so that's...
Now that just stops under the Slough Bridge, right?
No, it keeps going. It's
to where?
It goes from Tidd Street to the Slough Bridge under, and then there's a whole new ramp thing that you can see from the highway now. Not a ramp, but a elevated walkway kind of to the north.
Like behind Target?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's amazing. It's going to be really cool. So, you know, sort of the biggest missing piece right now, of course, is between sort of the Bray Cut and Eureka, but the estimates are 4 years for that to get done. Expensive section for sure, because there's just a lot of constraints.
Or wetlands and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, it certainly is a lot more expensive because you've got to get around all sorts of things, including, you know, latent rail lines and other things.
But in Arcata Redwood also.
Arcata Redwood, and there's the eucalyptus trees, and, you know, there's just a lot of obstacles in the way. And so, what I'm hearing from staff is 4 years for that. And so basically the Arcata to Eureka section, it will be completed. And then, you know, Eureka is starting to look at sections going south from Eureka to King Salmon, which would be really amazing.
It's going to be kind of halfway dicey, isn't it?
No, I mean, that's not as long as you're using the rail corridor. It's going to be really easy because...
Right, now that's out on the levee, right?
Yeah, there's a levee that's been built there. And actually, there's a trail that comes from King Salmon up to the levee that already exists now. And that was built as part of a PG&E project years ago.
Yeah, the one kind of around the corner there from the beach.
Yep, yeah. And so, and then if Arcata works on its section, say from Arcata to, say, the pump station where, you know, the water pump station is, then you could go, say, from the river to the ocean. You know, in a pretty reasonable ride with your family or what have you. And so really great access, you know, non-car access to both water bodies, which would be pretty cool. So you go for because it's a really great beach at King Salmon, too. So
shh.
What? You want to keep that a secret, huh?
That's where the dogs and us go.
Well, you know, you might have to share it.
And it's kind of it's most days is pretty active anyway.
Yeah, it's an it's a really nice spot.
The whole build up there from the Booner Point thing that I guess Jimmy was Smith was pretty involved with.
Right.
Seems to have stabilized. You know, it hasn't helped out the flooding in the winter, but it's stabilized erosion stuff.
Well, yeah, it certainly doesn't. It's not stopping sea level rise or anything like that.
Well, but, no, just with the canals not being dredged out on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, the canals, whether they're dredged or not, the sea level, you know, the level of the water is still going to be whatever
it is. Yeah, when a storm comes in, the storm's in. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But, I mean, you know, imagine being able to, as a, you know, a family in Eureka, to be able to take a Sunday ride with your kids on bikes out to the beach like that without having to get in a car and have a picnic or go eat at Gill's or whatever and come back. That's pretty cool. And
is that going to tie into CR?
Well, that's a longer vision. That's a longer vision for sure. But, you know, and think about going, say, from Arcata to, say, the river, for instance, or, say, Arcata to the beach. I mean, really, you just ride to Eureka along the waterfront and then to King Salmon, and it's not that far away.
Does that trail tie into the Hammond Trail through the...
Yes, yes.
Is it identified? Or?
Well, you basically, when you get into Arcata, then you would basically go on the roads in the bottoms, and then when you go over the Hammond Bridge, and that's it, that's the Hammond Trail. So, you know, you have some pretty decent bike riding and pedestrian access all the way. You'll have from Clam Beach all the way to King Salmon eventually, and not that far away.
Well,
so
don't
really amazing.
The 50-mile thing.
Oh, yeah.
I'll patrol you in the Lost Coast, I mean, for the hardcore... demented souls.
Yeah, well, you know, that's more for, you know, yeah, definitely the hardcore. But that we're talking about, you know, real accessible, no real slopes to deal with, well paved, and a lot of good access. So,
any thoughts to having them lit for safety during the
in town? They are lit. They are lit for sure. In Arcata, the trail sections that have been built there are well lit and safe, and people are using them now.
Yeah, the stuff that Arcata has got out towards Foster.
Mm-hmm. It's beautiful.
It's kind of intriguing. It kind of looks more English.
You like it?
Yeah, roll the fog. You're in a little English. Yeah. Everything except for the dreadlock thing isn't too English. Yeah. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:23. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, when you look at things like trails or access, you know, I know the Coastal Commission has its definition, and the local coastal plans have got their definitions.
Yep.
Property owners have their definitions. Community members have got theirs. Is there a national agreement on what is and what isn't, or is it still... this is California, and that's different than Texas, and that's different than Washington, and that's different than Delaware. And we just have kind of like a hodgepodge of different definitions of what the area is interested in.
Well, that's an interesting question. It actually goes back to Roman times when it's the idea of public trust lands and what lands are sort of managed in terms of like – the public trust, the everybody has some kind of ownership in that. And in general, in California and a lot of other places, you're talking about riverbeds, you're talking about anything that's in the water is generally public trust. And then the access to that is something that's also something from common law and also has English roots in terms of how we approach this. And then we have the layer of sort of California and how California looks at it in terms of the local coastal plan. But But again, that still goes back to,
of course,
these,
that's just the coast.
But it's those types of public access to those public trust lands, and those have been codified over centuries of how we as humans sort of manage public trust resources.
So, for example, let's say the upper reaches of the MAD.
Okay.
Okay. So it's no place that anybody's really that familiar with.
Well,
you got Rancher A on one side of the river, and you got Rancher B on the other side of the river.
Mm-hmm.
Their properties don't meet in the middle of the river.
Their property comes
to the beach, and that's as far?
Their property may meet in the middle of the river, but that doesn't mean that there isn't a public access overlay over a property. Just because you own a property doesn't mean that there aren't public access easements and overlays that exist on property.
So it's just part of the land contract that was agreed to when the property was purchased?
Who was agreed to when the state was made. You know, and it was, I mean, that's, it's, it, those go back to, you know, the fundamental creations of the state and language within the Constitution. Land ownership is an important part of how we function in society and how we, you know, manage our resources, but ownership isn't absolute in the way some people may believe it or want it to be. It's
it'd be similar to like roads, how roads happen?
For instance, yeah. Well,
or new roads, I guess.
Right. Well, it's sort of, except that these are natural features in the landscape that existed prior to roads, a lot of what we're talking about right now. So these are things that are just, they were predetermined by the nature of their construct. So basically, you know, from riverbank to riverbank, or from edge of water into the ocean, or basically the beach, and then the access points to those, and then, you know, have those been pre-established as public access in the past, and so those types of things do exist on our property overlays. I mean, it's just something that we deal with all the time, and
so
sometimes there's conflict, and sometimes it works really well.
How does it work then when, with the normal rise and fall of rivers?
Mm-hmm.
And new riverbeds, things change.
They do.
So is that like an adjustable?
Sometimes it is, and then that's a lot of times where conflicts can be created is when shorelines change, and that's one of the things that we're dealing with sea level rise now, right? In terms of what's the future going to look like,
right,
and the definition of what is a public trust land, and its overlay over private properties and public properties will change.
Well, the future kind of takes care of itself.
Well, sort of, except that we still have legal battles associated with all those things.
Well, that's why I was thinking about with the river.
Yeah, there's a whole...
Somebody gets hurt on the beach.
There's a whole study of this, you know, legal study of this.
Liability?
It's not just liability. It's really sort of what is public and what's not in terms of access and use. And that also, I mean, it's not just being able to walk on places, it's, you know, it's hunting, right, which is a big public trust issue and how that works.
Sure, in a lot of areas.
And fishing and clamming and foraging. And so these access things, not just on, and then there's traditional access in terms of.
Indians.
Right, exactly.
Rights,
yeah, American Indian access. And so. I am no legal expert in any of these things.
But it's out there, though.
But we deal with it all the time.
What about the liability? That would be the thing that I would be, particularly as litigious as we all seem to be at this point. Somebody's,
well, okay. You know, we're less litigious per capita than we were with the founding of this nation.
Okay, fair enough. I'm on Wilson Ranch property.
All right. I have a ranch. Woohoo!
Yeah. Walking on the stream bed.
Okay.
I trip over something that was there.
Right.
Break my ankle.
Yeah.
Okay. I sue you.
I guess.
Would I be successful in that?
I don't think so, but okay. I don't really know. You don't see a lot of those.
No, I was just, you know, unrecognized public that's the wrong term.
Mm-hmm.
Recognized public access, but not on an individual by individual basis. But as a landowner, I'm still there. Let's say maybe we've got a fire pit there. Maybe there's something. You know,
it's interesting because
going up
the times where you see that happen that I've seen is in terms of when access is not necessarily granted, or but when it's been blocked and someone hurts themselves going over a change in access. That's we've seen that happen before.
Like a chain over a
for instance,
road access.
Right, that's been traditionally used as public access, and then someone does something, and then someone trips or hurts themselves on that. Then that change has been something that's been an issue where, you know, if a flood creates a tripping hazard with some rocks, that's generally not been an issue.
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Times, 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Mike Wilson. Talk Shop presented by Mike Harvey State Farm Insurance, CDH Painting, and by REDEC. Mike, the concept of code enforcement is something that is, I think for most of us, hasn't been even a thought. You know, maybe our favorite restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Get something and, you know, says something, you know, a trap or that kind of thing. Okay, fine. I mean, that happens in the normal progress of business. Code enforcement in regards to the marijuana stuff is in a double spotlight.
Oh, it's blown up right now.
It's in the spotlight because it's new.
Yeah.
And it's in the spotlight because it's marijuana. So you work the two of them together, there's a lot of curiosity about that.
Well, and the technology's changed dramatically, too. So as many people may have read a few weeks ago, the code enforcement arm of our planning department sent out, 70 letters or something to that effect to landowners based on what we now have. We have satellite photos, which is a thing we didn't have. And now we basically have those satellite photos that we have on our geographic information systems that have all the parcel boundaries attached to them.
Yeah, the sheriff was saying that there's some folks, and that's their job, is they just kind of look at computer screens and do comparisons.
You don't even have to
when there's changes, we do a little bit of digging to see if
and
everybody's legit.
You don't even have to have people doing that anymore. I mean, it's not too far off to actually have an algorithm, really a computer, a bot per se, review those aerial maps, compare them to
just
the
looking for difference.
To the maps, yeah. And then if they see, you can basically program it to really identify the types of changes you're looking for, and then compare that to if people have put in permits or not, and then, you know, and off goes a letter. And it doesn't necessarily say that someone's guilty. It basically says, hey, we see something that looks like an enforceable action on your property. Say, it looks like marijuana is being grown or cannabis is being grown. It looks like you've moved.
It looks like something changed.
It looked like something changed. And so then if that's true, then it defines, it says, you know, this is a violation if it's true. Then that's, you know, it could be $10,000 a day per violation. Please come into our offices and have a talk, because it's quite possible that it's not. And so, but when those went out, I mean, we had, I think, almost 100% response from the landowners, or at least the folks that those came to. And I found it interesting because, you know, enforcement for cannabis is really not so much by the gun anymore. It's not, you know, the helicopters, and it's not the you know, the cavalcades of trucks and those sorts of, you know, the cavalry coming in and those sorts of, that's just not the method.
That was the good old days, right?
Well, it was a very ineffective way.
Well, yeah,
because you have a lot of person
left
power.
A good impression, though.
Not so much, because
it left an impression.
But not so much because this sounds a little strange, but I mean, it seems to me that people fear the $10,000 a day fine more than 10 years in jail. And in terms of like their response,
pocketbook always wins, doesn't it?
Right, that risk, you know. And so this is a very interesting time with relationship to those things. And then, but what I think what we are going to see happen, and it's going to be an issue for us, is a lot of these sites that are getting these letters are having a lot of impacts to them, you know, environmental impacts, or, you know, illegal grading and or structures and or whatever it may be. And then to ask for mitigation to clean up these sites, those costs could be more than the value of the property. And when that starts to happen, we're going to see abandonment of those properties. And when that starts to happen, we're going to have to we have an issue that we haven't really dealt with yet, which is how do we respond to that?
Well, like a brownfield.
Right, exactly. Only we may have many of them. And so how do we reintegrate those, say, orphan sites back into the landscape, back into into the functional, the functional watershed, I guess you'd say.
Well, play it out even further. Let's say these are squatters.
Well,
the landlord, and let's make it
right.
public property. So there is nobody to go to, you know,
right.
unless you want to go to the Forest Service.
Right.
Okay, now what? There it is, and there's a huge cleanup, and nobody really owns it.
Right.
Associated with the activity.
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, that would be the next level. So if these properties don't get sold or whatever, or taken care of, and that's my point, is like we need to start thinking about a program to reintegrate those before they get squatted on or all these other problems start to occur. And so,
public lands will be very interesting.
Yeah. So this new type of enforcement is definitely going to be interesting. It's going to change how we really work with these latent properties and how we bring people into compliance or not.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41. We'll be back with more from Mike Wilson.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Mike Wilson. Mike, following up on the discussion we had last segment about the enforcement letters and that whole process that is starting but may not have all the variables yet locked down, so to speak. When you're dealing with somebody who's the landowner themselves, okay, and you're dealing with somebody who is government, well, okay, it's kind of an amorphous and it's not a person. Okay. What about the guy who or gal who owns the property but has no idea it really is a squatter, or the out-of-area landowner who has no idea, and all of a sudden he starts getting these letters talking about these fines and people are there? You drop me a letter and there's somebody from the, let's say, the Bulgarian crime syndicate there. I'm not going to drive an in and say, hey, by the way, guys, off my property. You're not going to see me again. Okay. So how do you deal with some of these that aren't kind of just the easy, straightforward, normal, it's Papstein's property, he's growing, and I haven't taken out a permit. Okay, here's your permit, and here's the money, and we're all okay now. But some of these other variables that you know you're going to run into.
Yeah, well, I mean, those are kind of the outliers. We have so many.
But those could be the big ones, though, too.
Well, it's not so much because, I mean, what we're seeing now is we have plenty of sites where there are property owners that are associated with the properties directly. I mean, we have a long ways to go to get through just that stock of basically, you know, violators in terms of these code enforcement issues related to cannabis. I mean, and it's part of the job of the county to deal with that.
What's been the compliance percentage?
The compliance percentage?
Yeah. Oh, gee, here's my money. Here's my forms. Sorry, mea culpa. And now that's on the good guy list instead.
Know what that is because we've just started this process. And it'll be difficult because if they have – these are all sites where they have not put in their applications, and that door is closed for a lot of these places. So that's – it's going to be very difficult for a lot of these folks to come into compliance if they haven't already.
Now, that's county determination when the season for permits was?
Yep. Yeah. And so not going to be easy for – and that's why I have that concern. And it's not because I think that people should be – given a pass. That's certainly not what I'm saying at all. The concern is that the cleanup of these sites, again, is going to be cost more than the value of the property, especially now that the property is not permittable. So as we see the value...
So it really becomes a walk away.
Well, because we're going to see a real stratification occur between properties that are permitted and properties that are not in terms of value, in terms of how we deal with them.
Well, it certainly wouldn't be ag production if they weren't permitted.
Well, who knows? And it's just going to be very, I mean, if you're going to be, if you're going to return that property to say cattle or timber or whatever it is, or try and keep a residence on site, you know, the person who lives in that place is going to have to derive their income from something other than cannabis. And so that's going to be a very difficult, at least directly from that property. And so, you know, it's going to be harder for people to sort of live in the hills if they don't have that external.
Yeah, they become regular guy instead of.
Well, regular is whatever. I don't know. I mean, what is regular these days, for Humboldt County?
Operating outside the law and outside the permits is not. Hopefully the regular thing that makes it outside, you know.
So. Yeah. Well, it's definitely changing the dynamic of how we view our landscapes.
So it sounds like there's not systemic sympathy in the county at this point for those that stayed outside and now they're getting popped because they stayed outside.
The sympathy came in the last year and a half in sort of like asking and really coaxing people to get into the system and telling them what the value was. When these letters went out a couple of weeks ago, many of the people that were complaining about the cost of being in the system suddenly didn't think that cost was as much relative to what's coming down the pike for those who decide to stay out of the system.
Do they have recourse?
Do who have recourse?
Those who received the letter.
Well, their recourse is to either show that they aren't that these violations are not really the case, or clean them up.
Thanks for coming by.
Sure.
Oh, man, and I've ran out of time to ask you what's your favorite Thanksgiving.
Stuffing.
Thank you very much. See you, everybody.